You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey guys. So ends the saga of Michael Eisner with Dismembered Part 6. So this is, of course, a very weird, different kind of thing than we've done before, so let us know what you think about it. Daniel and I are working on potentially some other ideas if you really enjoyed it. Also, check this feed this weekend. I might add another episode or re-release something in honor of a recent movie. Yeah, I'll leave it at that in case I don't do it. And then finally, if you're interested in seeing Cineprov, we are performing Red Dawn the first Thursday of June, which is the 6th. I will not be in the performance, but I will be there to hang out and see you guys and enjoy Red Dawn with one of my favorites, Patrick Swayze. Thanks. Oh, before I forget, please review, rate, enjoy, share. I know I haven't been doing as much social media lately because I've been busy as hell, but it really does make a difference on who sees this podcast. So thanks, guys.
Welcome to Dismembered, the stories behind your childhood. This season, we're taking a look at Michael Eisner and the Disney Renaissance. I'm Daniel, and once again joining me are Nick and John. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Oh, that's classic right there. Throughout the season, we've been talking about their ups and downs, and by now you should realize that Michael Eisner is some sort of weird goblin that wreaks havoc wherever he goes and steals all the gold, right?
He's Wreck-It Ralph.
Gonna wreck it.
He's Dr. Evil.
Well, as I left last time, Disney still had a bunch of commercial hits, but there were definitely some cracks showing in their armor, especially with the ongoing lawsuit between Eisner and Katzenberg and some of the business practices coming to light. Right now, we're in about the early 2000s, and this is where the Michael Eisner era wraps up. So, spoiler, guys, but this is going to be it for this season.
No.
I know, John. I'll give you a hug after this. To start with, despite some people losing confidence in Disney's business practices, their tourism revenue was still very strong, and they depended on it from their parks. But in 2001, there was something that happened that really caused, among other things, tourism revenue to plummet. And that was 9/11.
9/11.
Yep.
9/11. Loose change.
I found some of that in the couch one time. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
It got so bad in 2001 that Eisner did not receive his bonus payment. And even worse, the company had to cut 4,000 jobs that year.
Oh no, he didn't get a bonus. Had it only been 3,000, he would have still gotten it. But 4,000 people.
Yeah, he didn't get a bonus, but 4,000 people got fired. Let's pause for a moment of silence.
Can somebody play taps or something? Anyway, also in 2000...
We need like a Mickey Mouse...
Also in 2001, Eisner bought Fox Family for $3 billion and renamed it ABC Family, which is now Freeform, which features shows starring Kevin Bacon. Okay, probably not really. So even in 2002, after the bad year that was 2001, there were already calls for Eisner to go. ABC was the third...
You said $3
billion? $3
billion.
With a B? With a B, yes, $3
billion. Wow. Okay.
Even in 2002, there were already calls for Eisner to go. ABC was the third-rated network, the park attendance was down, and there had been talk of a possible credit downgrade. But the board of directors included a lot of Eisner's friends, including Sidney Poitier. This meant that not only did he remain, he was still being well-paid, even though Disney wasn't doing all that well. But Disney was losing a lot of allies. In 2003, Pixar announced it would not remain with Disney to distribute its films. In 2005, the Weinsteins officially broke ties with Disney after a public dispute in 2004 over the distribution of Fahrenheit 9/11.
That turned out to be a good thing.
In the long run, yes, but in the short term, they'd gotten rid of all of their indie cred and all of the big things, because Miramax pretty much ruled the 90s in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did they go with Miramax? Weinstein?
Miramax remained with Disney, and I'm not sure if they still have the brand active, but it still may be there. The Weinsteins left Miramax and formed the Weinstein Company.
Which just folded.
Which just,
Which just declared
yeah,
bankruptcy.
because, you know, it turned
Yeah.
out Harvey allegedly did a bunch of sick things he was not supposed to be doing.
That
Well,
damn
and.
invisible rabbit.
Right. And his brother is just kind of hung out to dry.
Yeah.
So in 2004, sensing weakness, Comcast tried to buy Disney for $54 billion.
Talk about an evil
There you
empire,
go.
Comcast ever.
And they own Universal now, actually. I just realized that the other day when I was watching a movie, and under Universal, it was like a Comcast company. I'm like, oh, damn it.
Yeah.
But you people are evil.
Why won't you make me let me hate you?
At the time, though, Disney's brand still had enough goodwill that their stock actually rose, and they were able to reject the offer, and Comcast actually withdrew it in April, and they still consider it embarrassing that they had ever tried that. This whole incident, though, with all the toil and strife that was happening, started the Second Save Disney campaign, which you may remember also happened back in the 80s and had bought Eisner on board in the first place. Roy Disney, you remember Roy, right? Good old Roy.
He
Good
was
old.
still
He's
alive?
not anymore, but he was at the time.
Oh, wow.
He had quit the board and basically started a negative ad campaign against Eisner to get the public against him.
It's a bad thing when the remaining Disney brother is campaigning against his own company.
It might have been the nephew, but yes. In fact, I think it was the nephew.
He's like 100 years old. Like,
Yeah.
Walt had died like 30 years prior, man. Like.
Now, it didn't take a much to help tarnish Eisner's brand at Disney, because their movies they were releasing at the time were not doing that well. We can start with The Emperor's New Groove. You guys remember that?
Yeah, I like it, but it
Yeah.
didn't do well.
Yeah.
Well, I like it too. It's actually pretty funny, but the whole thing about it was it showcased just how much internal argument was making Disney's films. A couple of years ago, there was this movie that was leaked onto YouTube called The Sweatbox. It was a movie that had Sting's, well, it was directed by Sting's wife and featured Sting. He had been hired by Disney to write music for one of their films called Kingdom in the Sun, which would have been about the Incas.
That's
Wait,
interesting.
wait, 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 wait. This is that shitty movie with Kenneth Branagh and Kevin Kline, right? You know what I'm talking about? Where they find Inca gold.
No, that was The Road to El Dorado. That was a DreamWorks thing, I
That's
think.
right, but that's the exact same. It sounds the exact
Well,
same.
you'll figure out where it goes from here. And it very well could be because Katzenberg may still have been at the studio when this was originally getting pitched.
Well, but this is that bullshit where it's like one studio makes A Bug's Life and one studio makes Ants, like where they're just kind of like cribbing each other's
Yeah, pretty
notes.
much.
We'll go on.
The movie started out as an adaptation, and I'm going to rely on you for this, Nick, of The Prince and the Pauper set in the Inca Empire. This was actually partially made, and animatics still exist, with Owen Wilson providing the voice of the Pauper.
Oh, wow,
Oh, wow,
D.
we look exactly
Oh,
alike. Wow!
wow.
You have to sound more like you broke your nose and it never fully healed.
Oh,
Oh,
wow. Unrelated note, did you see the video someone put together of Star Wars lightsaber
Yes,
battles?
yes, I
The
have.
replacement? Yes!
John Goodman ended up playing in the eventually released film, but that's not the only change they made.
John Goodman played
The,
what
well,
Owen
the
Wilson
Prince the
would
Pauper role. Roger Allers, the director of The Lion King, was hired to direct this and was featured very prominently in the documentary. The film originally had a lot more to do with Incan mythology and culture, most of which was removed in the final cut. I mean, you guys remember, they practically don't even mention anything about the Incas. It's just this, slacker.
No, it had nothing to do. I mean, like, it had some of the drawings, but, like,
Exactly.
this is nothing like it. It's funny because what you're describing at first sounds very much like, actually, John, you would know this, the Tintin book Prisoner of the Sun,
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
which is essentially, a little bit of Prince and the Pauper, a little bit of a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court set among the Mayans, right? Which is kind of a Belgian comic. But yeah, no, it's nothing like, so I don't know. I do like the John Goodman role, but otherwise, yeah, you're not even close. It might be the best David Spade has
I
ever
don't
been.
know. I don't know. Dirt was pretty good.
Yeah. Dirt 2, where he travels in
Well,
time for
David
some
Spade
reason.
was always meant to play the Emperor, and he's interviewed in this documentary as well. Sting mentions in the film originally there was no script. He worked on the songs based on what Roger Allers told him the film was about. His wife was invited to do a documentary about Sting's involvement, which ended up capturing all these production problems. Among some other things, they had different characters in there. First, there was going to be like this little talking Olmec statue that Harvey Fierstein was going to voice. Oh my God.
That's pretty
Oh
good.
my
Oh,
God.
gravelly.
I'm a rock man now. It's the part I was born to play. So this would have been the
Yeah,
dragon
oh, it would have been
from
that same type of
Mulan,
character,
like
yes.
the
Just speaking from personal taste, they feature some of Sting's music in this documentary, and it's not good. There's a bunch of weird songs, and some of them ended up on the soundtrack, which check that out if you can. But there's this like one little nursery rhyme about a llama that's in there, and then the only pretty much good thing that he wrote that didn't end up in the movie was Eartha Kitt's villain song.
Eartha Kitt was the villain in that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Really? She was
Yes.
the witch person. Yzma, I think. Yep.
Yzma. Yeah, it's an interesting movie that well, I mean, it's just a comedy farce. Like there's kind of a moral eventually, so there's that, which is nice. But other than that, like, it's like a goofy movie where it's not really a Disney movie because it's not really a full. Like there's not like a B plot. It's a very kind of on the nose story, which is fine because it allows for more comedy. But to think that this was going to be a musical like every other Disney
And
movie
it
is
would have
kind
been
of
like one of
funny.
those epic fantasies too. I mean, the llama thing was always in there, but it was in a B plot, and the llama emperor eventually falls in love with this some llama peasant llama keeper or something. The animatics were eventually screened for the heads of Disney Feature Animation in the sweat box, which is this unair conditioned room at Disney Studios where they do screeners like that. It's called the sweat box both because it doesn't have air conditioning and because you're sweating because you're so nervous about what the big bosses are going to think. It's a thing, right? They hated it and demanded massive changes. And in fact, in this documentary, there's this bit where one of the people involved in it is saying, "Oh man, they could tell us that they hate the whole Prince of the Pauper thing, and then we're going to be really screwed," which is what happened.
What's wrong with the Prince and the Pauper?
They didn't like it. They didn't think that it was working.
And yet, what they ended up with was even more cliched.
Well, and either way, characters ended up getting removed. Voice actors were fired, including Owen Wilson, which I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when he got the pink slip.
Well, he's notorious for getting cut from projects, right? Wasn't he mostly cut from his own movie, Bottle
Bottle
Rockets?
Rocket? He's in that a good bit.
No, not Bottle Rockets. Which Wes Anderson movie did he write?
The Royal Tenenbaums?
No,
Yes,
he wasn't in
he
Royal
was that
Tenenbaums.
author.
It's gonna drive me. No, that's not the one I'm thinking of though. He was the writer, the one who wrote the Custer book. Yeah,
Rushmore,
I
maybe?
forget now. I think he was mostly maybe he maybe it was Rushmore, but he was mostly cut out of his own movie. Anyway,
Well,
he's kind of
either
notorious for
way,
that
he's
happening
gone from
too,
this
which
little
is.
Disney movie. As was Harvey Fierstein. Oh my God, I've gotten a pink slip. Laura Pepperon, whom you may remember from Orange is the New Black and That 70s Show. And Carla Gugino, she was.
Did you know?
Yes, her.
Who's that?
Oh, in the Watchmen movie, she was the first Silk Spectre. And most of Sting's music was removed as well, but he was still, he wasn't fired because they were still going to use some of his music. In fact, he's the guy who got the ending changed. You remember how it ends, where the whole thing is that he was going to build a mountain resort and destroy John Goodman's village in order to do it. Originally, the film was going to end with him building a theme park on a different mountain that was uninhabited, and he invited the peasant family over to share that moment. But when Sting found that out, he felt that what this signified was that the destruction of the rainforest was ultimately good and threatened to quit.
Ooh.
I thought they were going to build it on Splash Mountain. I think it's just a critique on them
Probably.
growing Disney World.
Yeah, that sounds like a horrible ending.
It does. I mean, it's kind of just a testament to the fact that they scraped this movie together out of anything. She's also in Spy Kids and Sin City. I don't know if that helps either. She was also in This Boy's Life, but that doesn't mean. She was also in Troop Beverly Hills.
Yes, her.
Yeah, Lucille.
And she was, I think, the kid's mom in Spy Kids. All right, yeah, that's her.
That's correct. Yeah.
So, in terms of this actual documentary, Disney buried it, and it played in like one theater so it would qualify for the Oscars. And when it didn't get nominated, they refused to let the film be screened. In 2012, the work print was leaked onto YouTube and removed the next day, which I remember, that's how I got my copy of it. But it's now on archive.org if anybody ever wants to check it out. And the whole thing is, in my view, this documentary is actually an excellent showcase of the animators versus the executives. All the animators are just so excited to be working on this film, and Yzma's creator talks about being a child in England dreaming of working for Disney and how he'll be working on this character for 2.5 years. Also, for a Disney movie, this is rare, there are F-bombs in it.
Really?
As for The Emperor's New Groove, well, this is the documentary that they buried, so. As for The Emperor's New Groove, it grossed about $90 million in the US, but was a huge hit on DVD. Most of the other films at this time were huge bombs as well. You had Dinosaur, which I'm not sure if you guys remember, but that was supposed to be that photorealistic dinosaur movie.
It was garbage.
The person that originally pitched that, by the way, back in the late 80s was Paul Verhoeven, the guy who directed RoboCop and Total Recall. It was supposed to be an imaginary nature documentary with no dialogue, but that eventually changed and became more of a standard Disney movie, but the idea of using that computer animation was Eisner's. So he saw what Pixar was doing, he's like, I can do that, but he couldn't. The movie didn't get good reviews and barely broke even in the US.
I'm surprised it did that well. It was garbage. It really was
Treasure
awful.
Planet was also released during this time, which we talked about before. That was the dream project that the makers of Hercules had agreed to direct, wanted to do, and that's why they directed Hercules so that their dream would get greenlit. It was the first film released simultaneously in normal theaters and IMAX, which power to Disney, that had never been done before. And it was actually very well received by critics, but it was a catastrophic bomb. Oh, and John, you may be interested in this. Treasure Planet was Patrick McGoohan's final film role.
Was it really?
It was.
I've never seen it. What did he play in it?
I think he played the Billy Bones character, I want to say.
'Cause that was basically Treasure Island in
Yeah, he
space,
was
right?
Billy Bones in Treasure Planet. And yeah, it was Treasure Island in space.
Neat.
Figured you'd enjoy that.
That's an unfortunate one to end your career on, but go
Well, if it
figure.
helps, what I like to think is just 2 years before he reprised the role of Number Six on The Simpsons.
I remember that episode, yeah.
He invented the bottomless peanut bag. Also, Lilo and Stitch came out during this time, which is still fairly popular. And Home on the Range was for a while the last traditionally animated film, which is about cows.
I don't think I've even heard of that one.
It's garbage too. It's the kind of thing that would be on in like a pediatrician's office and like in the background that no one's watching because it's terrible.
Kind of like Madagascar 3, which was running at the doctor's office for the past four times I went to the pediatrician in the past week. I got to know that film very well.
Or like Trolls.
Yeah.
Like it's just like these movies are nothing but like a warm blanket, like.
Now, the worst part of all this, arguably, was the fact.
Well, hold on. What time period are we looking at here? These are the
This is
mid
like
2000s?
2000 to 2005. And the
Yeah,
movie, the
okay.
Cow movie, was I think 2003.
Yeah, because I think at this point, Disney kind of fell off my radar. I went through a period where I just didn't see any Disney movies until I think Toy Story. I think that was the first one I
Oh,
saw in a
yeah.
long time.
Wait, Toy Story? You mean
Yeah.
like Toy
The
Story?
Mr. Two?
Oh, three,
Three?
yeah.
Yeah. Whatever the next one was at the end of like
Yeah, that
27.
was, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think I tuned back in after Wreck-It Ralph, which I think is very good. I can't believe they're making another Incredibles movie this long after. A sequel should strike while the meta is still kind of warm. It's been, what, 10 years?
No,
Yeah, I think it's been exactly
14
10 years,
years.
yeah.
I know because I took a date in high school to see The Incredibles.
Oh, gruff.
Ooh.
That's a long time. Not because you took it for a date, but because it's been that long. It's a shame. I love everyone around it. I think it's a great movie. It's the best Fantastic Four movie
Yep.
we've ever had.
It's a
It
better
just
Watchmen movie than the Watchmen adaptation that we got.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Well, I think it shows that I mean, it's the Disneyfication of Pixar that they came out with all these fantastic movies, and then as soon as Disney took them over, sequel after sequel after sequel. And now they've run out of new stuff, so it's only a matter of time before we get Wall-E 2.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's because, frankly, they stole John Lasseter away. Because John Lasseter was the creative force, and now, since he's taken over Disney, they've also done Moana, and they've done Frozen, and they've done these big hits, and Pixar's making Cars 3.
Ew.
Yeah. But Pixar is still a part of Disney now, right?
Yes, it is.
It's a wholly owned subsidiary, yeah.
Originally, they were an independent thing, and Disney was just distributing their movies.
So Disney bought them, and thus, that we're where we are today, where Disney owns everything.
Yep, we sure are. What was arguably worse for Eisner, though, at the time, was the fact that DreamWorks was doing phenomenally well, mostly thanks to Shrek, which came out in 2001. Now, most know about the development cycle. It had originally been a Chris Farley vehicle before he died, and then they hired Mike Myers.
God, Chris Farley?
Yeah, Chris Farley.
You can look it up online. Someone has synced the Atomatic to his audio track because he had effectively recorded everything.
So I'm guessing somehow it just didn't work.
Well, that was another thing where they had originally seen the work print. It was based on a children's book that was a lot different from the movie, and they had seen the work in progress and decided, no, this isn't funny. This isn't working.
Yeah. Which is, it's a weird call because, well, for a lot of reasons. Mike Myers, of course, had to make him Scottish. Chris Farley was just kind of doing his normal blustery voice. And there's just, it's a weird, because you have to try really hard to not make Chris Farley funny. Right? So, whatever. Well, like, literally, that's a huge whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, they redid it, and the movie cost $60 million, and it grossed almost $485 million total. What was worse is that there were a lot of shots taken at Disney. The villain, Farquaad, which was meant to be Fuckwad, was modeled after Eisner. If you look at the two of them side by side, you'd be surprised how much they look alike.
They do, down to the small penis joke.
Yep.
Yeah.
So DreamWorks was riding high. They were outdoing Disney.
And if I remember, it may have been this time or it may have been later on, but DreamWorks actually had more animators in studio than Disney did. And considering Disney was known for its animations, I remember people saying that that was just a slap in the face to Disney, and that's how far they fell.
Yeah, and further, like, while Pixar is technologically advanced, Disney was kind of seen as old-fashioned, and then, like you were alluding to, when they tried to do the new fashion stuff, it turned out to be a disaster with that Dinosaurs movie.
Yeah.
And then, not only did DreamWorks win, like, that sounds like a joke, but I do think that Shrek won Academy Award for Best Animated Movie.
It did. It was the first winner, I believe.
Yeah. It's also a funny movie that appealed to people. Like you said, it made $500 million, just about.
It's still funny.
It's something. It's definitely, I mean, again, especially compared to what was happening at the time, it's a pretty good PG comedy, right?
Yeah. Like,
and that's a genre which hadn't existed in a long time. So every game that Disney set up, it's now losing to, which is a problem. Because if you can't even get the cheesy Disney pathos down and you put out a movie like Atlantis or Dinosaurs, you're really talking about losing the one thing you're good at. In fact, if anything, I like Emperor's New Groove better than Shrek, but Disney tried to bury it because it was embarrassed by what it had become.
Exactly, and I think all the production problems were fairly well known in the industry at the time.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, are we talking about Atlantis? Because this would have been about the same time as Atlantis, right? And
Michael J. Fox, man.
I'm guessing that was not a commercial success.
Well, I mean,
either.
Do you really remember it as fondly as you remember any of the other Disney movies?
I do, actually. I loved Atlantis.
I saw it recently. It's on Netflix, I think.
Yeah.
It's something.
I watched it recently. I love it that it doesn't have any musicals. It's got a decently adult plot, and it's not afraid to, like, the villain is a pretty damn bad villain.
I've never seen it, so I couldn't tell you.
I mean, the only problem I really have with it, John, and I mean, who knows, maybe it's a stay tuned, but, like, the villain is obvious he's the villain.
Yeah.
But it takes him a while to do anything villainous. Like, it's not like Scar, where he's introduced and you're like, oh, that's going to be the bad guy. And then 10 minutes later, he's having a monologue about how evil he is. I mean, and that's really something that kind of bothered me eventually. When the military guy played by, is it Ed Herman? It's some big blustery guy. Anyway, whoever. Decides to be evil after, like, an hour 15 out of an hour and 40 minute movie. I don't know. Otherwise, it is charming. I do love Michael J. Fox doing anything.
Well, to answer your question about whether or not it was a commercial hit, John, it cost between $90 and $120 million to make. In North America, it earned $84 million. Now, worldwide, it grossed $186 million, but even so, that's not really... I mean, Shrek cost $60 million and made $485 million, so...
And it was... James Garner was the bad guy.
Yeah, that's
He's right. got a good voice.
He does.
But, yeah, I mean, I can see why it didn't do so well, because it wasn't Disney. But if you want to see a train wreck, see the sequel.
I'd rather not.
Like, oh, that's right!
Oh, my goodness. It was so bad. I couldn't even sit through it. It was so bad. The animation is even worse than, like, Saturday morning cartoon. It was like they spent $10 on some Korean kid to make a movie, and that was it.
But no, it's funny you say that. Like, I know they make these sequels to make pennies on the dollar at this point, because they have the character models, the voice actors, generally with the exception of Michael J. Fox and James Garner, it's a lot of voice actors and then nothing. Like, the woman who played Pocahontas was an actress, but not, like, a known quantity, really, right? You know, it's that kind of a thing. And so, like, recently I've been buying up Blu-rays and then kind of flipping them and just keeping the Vudu code so I can watch the cartoons with Naomi, and almost all of them come with the sequel, right? Mulan, yeah. Pocahontas, Little Mermaid now has, like, two sequels. And so, like, you buy the edition and then you just, like, get these other two almost movies for free, and it's really a shame, especially when the starting material isn't great. Like, Pocahontas is fine, it's got some good tunes, but it's not a great film. And then you're like, oh, the sequel's even worse. Oh no. Yes. Oh no.
Well, one other thing about Atlantis, the production designer was, and I'm probably going to butcher his name because I've never heard it pronounced, Mike Mignola.
Sure.
The guy who created Hellboy.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Well, I know that the actual the Atlantean language was made like it was a fully fleshed out language by the guy who made the Klingon language in Star Trek. So they brought him on to create a whole new language and writing stuff.
I mean, that cost $25 million there,
Yeah,
so.
right there, exactly.
Also, it was Jim Varney's last performance.
That's right. That's a shame. Ernest goes to his own funeral, I guess.
Oh.
Man, I tell you what, you wanted a joke, a voice of a guy who sounded like he had been smoking since birth. Like, it's him, it's Lunch Lady Doris, also dead. Like, those voices, man, those are great voices. Ugh, it's a
It
shame.
had a good cast.
It did. I mean, again, I love Michael J. Fox. It'll be a sad day when Harvey Fierstein goes. Who's gonna sound like a cigarette smoker?
Oh my God, but I'm immortal. I can never die.
That's good. I think he just was born like that too. I don't know. I assume he smoked, but it'd be great if he just had that voice as a
Wow.
toddler. I'm hungry.
Oh God, that's actually starting to hurt. Even though, as I said, goodwill towards Disney increased after Comcast tried to buy them, that didn't save Eisner. He was removed as board chairman in 2004 after a vote by the Disney shareholders. He did remain as CEO, but, and here comes the violins, everyone, Eisner officially resigned from that position on September 30th, 2005. He had no gold watch ceremony.
Oh.
Do, do, do,
Bob Iger took over as CEO and still serves in that position as of 2018.
Now, is that Michael Eisner with a mustache?
Yeah.
I don't think he'd be that
He
creative.
just twirls it.
Well, I mean,
Yeah,
Bob.
not Eisner. Oh.
Eisner to Iger? Yeah, no, real creative there, buddy.
Iger had already been a big deal at ABC for a while, and he was known in the company, so there you go. Eisner's
I
son.
guess so. You showed
Eisner's
me.
son Breck Eisner is now a director in his own right, who is most
Brick.
B as in boy, Reck.
Breck.
Brecken Eisner. He's in shitty comedies.
Well, he's most famous for directing the infamous bomb Sahara that had.
Oh, no shit.
He directed
He
that?
did.
That was a stupid movie.
You,
That
no.
was
Your
Wilson.
question should have been, someone
I
directed
think.
that. Anyone directed that. That movie's.
I think it is among the biggest bombs in history, if not the flat out biggest bomb in history.
I don't know. Cutthroat Island is still pretty far up there.
Yeah.
And Waterworld.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, it was supposed to be a layup because it's a huge book. Like, it's the book that made Clive Cussler,
I
who's
hate.
like kind of a big deal. I know you hate him and he's not great, but like,
I can go on at length about what I hate about Clive Cussler, but
but
carry on.
he's still big. Like, I don't like Dan Brown, but he can he's st you can't argue he's a big not a big author. And
Yeah.
like, that was the book who made him, and it's a good cast. It just it's the one of the hardest swings and a miss for nothing. You know, it's like that John Carter from Mars. That makes it was a bomb, but it was also a 90-year-old property, right? Like,
They got it
I
for
don't know.
All right, I'm looking up the box office bombs now. It's not, in fact, the business. In fact, it's pretty far down the list. But that's still, it was still a huge embarrassment. And after that, the only other thing I know that Breck Eisner directed was that remake of The Crazies that came out in 2010, 2009.
Oh wow.
That's
That's a
important.
far pull.
As for Eisner himself, and he's still a billionaire, by the way, in 2017 he reemerged when he bought the Portsmouth Football Club.
Sorry.
That's how you know you've made it.
As for his biggest rival, Katzenberg, the anime, he suffered a humongous bomb around the same time Finding Nemo was released with the 2D animated version of Sinbad, The Legend of the Seven Seas, with Brad Pitt.
Oh,
Oh,
I
God.
remember that movie. I never saw it. That was a again, a huge swing for a big miss.
Yeah.
It suffered a $125 million loss and almost bankrupted DreamWorks Animation.
Well, your first mistake was naming something after Sinbad.
And also, how do you not get Sinbad to play Sinbad? Like, if you're going to screw up...
Exactly.
Well, Sinbad was too busy playing a genie in that movie that doesn't exist.
Okay, so the Mandela effect is all bullshit, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we can agree on this.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
I mean, I make up movies all the time in my own head. Like, it's just, it's not real. None of this is real. Get over it, people. I'm sorry Sinbad was... You're all racist. Black people don't look the same. It's okay. Leave it be, guys. Really, leave it be.
So, DreamWorks actually spun off its animated division in 2004, but Katzenberg remains CEO. NBC Universal bought the company in 2016, at which point Katzenberg stepped down. Last year, it was revealed, 2017, it was revealed he started a new venture called Winder Co.
Which is selling Facebook data to the Russians?
Yeah.
Well, they've got an official website, and he managed to raise quite a bit of money to do it. Almost 600 for this company. It raised almost $600 million, and it is, according to its website, a new media and technology company.
So my joke is, like, literally 100% accurate. Like, it's either that or laundering money for the mafia. Like,
here, their website, I'm just reading it right now. It's one page. Winder Co., a new media and technology company. Brought to you by Andrew Cheng, Ann Daly, Sujay Jaswa, Jeffrey Katzenberg, Anthony Sala, Amberine Tobasi, Shen Li Wang. Winder Co. is a holding company based in Los Angeles and San Francisco. We acquire and develop exceptional businesses in the digital media and software as a service space, and leverage our partners' expertise and relationships to help them hire talent, expand operations, and grow revenue.
So is this episode brought to you by them, or?
I want some of that $600 million. No, seriously, look them up online, take a look at their website, and ask yourself if you'd invest.
I don't know. Are we investing in shitty movies? Because that's kind of my game now. So,
according to Variety, Katzenberg says that he hopes his company will reinvent TV for mobile devices.
Didn't Netflix already do that?
Yeah. I mean, is this like the Disney streaming service that may or may not ever exist?
Well, no, because Katzenberg runs it, and they don't want anything to do with him.
Well, it could be DreamWorks. It could be whatever. Like, I don't know. It's a rough time to be Netflix, but Netflix is going to win, is the way I kind of feel about all this.
I don't know. I've been skeptical about what Netflix is doing these days.
But, I mean, again, it's kind of like everyone's pulling away because Disney wants to have their own streaming service. Fox wants to have their own streaming service, right? But when they inevitably fail, they're just going to go back to Netflix. It's happened before. I think it's going to happen
again.
That's
true. There have been some streaming channels that are dead. What was that comedy one that... that Dan Harmon, Dungeons and Dragons, used to be on?
It's now Verve. It used to be something Amazon created. Now it's gone. Fuck. Yeah. Case in point. You know, and then, I mean, Criterion's own streaming services is okay because they have their own kind of thing. But there aren't many people who can do it, you know. So I don't know. It'll be interesting.
If anyone could, it would be Disney.
Yeah, I mean, because they have the movies that they can just throw back in the vault, but, like, I don't know. Like, right now, I'm trying to get a copy of The Little Mermaid, and next year is the 30th anniversary, so it's impossible to find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just kind of how Disney's always operated. At least now things don't go into the vault for a decade. It's like a year or two to build up action for the next
release. And there's bootlegs out now that are just very easy to find. Not that we encourage that here.
No, we don't, but... I mean, I will say this here, because whatever. If someone makes it impossible to get something, I don't think it's a big deal. If you could easily buy, like, Rick and Morty's a classic example, because everyone wanted to get them right the fuck away. But it's a basic cable channel that puts it on their website, and then they come out the second the season's over. Yeah. That's questionable. If you want to watch Song of the South, the only way to get it is through bootleg, because Disney, well, frankly, it's very boring, but Disney's embarrassed by it.
Rightly so, I'd say.
Well, right. I mean, the racism is there, fine, but there's more racist movies out there, like Gone with the Wind.
The problem is the movie is boring as shit. So, but again, it's still something I grew up with. The Zippity Doodah song was everywhere, but none of the rest of the movie was, except for Splash Mountain, of course.
Well, gentlemen, that is the story of Michael Eisner, Jeffrey Katzenberg, and the Disney Renaissance.
It sounds like he's been dead for a long time, but he's not. He's just unemployed.
Yeah. Well, he owns a football club now, so hooray.
I guess.
Yeah, that's like owning a nice car. Everyone has one.
I mean, this is effectively, unless John and I go to a Charming Sunday football match for Atlanta United, which we should, by the way.
Yes.
This is possibly the last time John and I will have to talk football positively without getting into fisticuffs, since in the first round of the World Cup, Belgium is playing England.
Oh, boy.
You mean England is beating Belgium?
Whatever. Although, frankly, again, it doesn't really matter, because if we beat you or you beat us, it doesn't matter, because it's just the opening rounds.
You're right. And I'm pretty sure... It's okay. You know. As long as we beat the other guys, we're okay.
Which we're expected to, actually.
Yes.
And when you guys are playing someone I don't care about, I do have an England kit from the last World Cup, so I will be wearing it.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Disney, man.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, very much for joining me. Why don't we go around and plug what you've got, starting with you, Nick?
Hi. I'm the host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood. Look it up. It's still there somewhere, I assume. If you're in the Atlanta area, which I assume a lot of you are, check out Cineprov. We generally perform the first Thursday of the month, but as we get bigger, they move us occasionally to weekend days. So just, you know, check Cineprov. We're on Facebook and cineprov.com. CineProv. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. John?
All right, and I'm the host of Mission Briefing, the James Bond podcast. Anything and everything James Bond. And that's all I have. I'm nothing special. Nothing.
Oh, don't say that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all very much for listening. We hope you've enjoyed hearing about the Disney Renaissance, and we hope you'll come back again as we tell a little bit more of the stories behind your childhood. Thanks, guys.
Cool. See you guys later.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network. Your station for all things geek.